This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. When he was seated as the state Senate's new president, Senator Bill Cole said one of his legislative priorities was to end West Virginia's sue and settle mentality. That is, plaintiffs sue for a large amount of money and defendants settle to avoid long, expensive lawsuits. The new leadership saw to rein in such use of the court system by enacting tort reform laws. Continuing our occasional series, Effective from Passage, Morgantown attorney Dan Ringer joins us again for an explanation of two of these laws. What is tort reform anyway?
Well, tort reform deals with the word tort. Tort is not something you bake in your kitchen. Tort is a wrong that someone commits against you for which money damages would compensate you. Now, one of the funny things about our society is we put a dollar figure on everything. Things that you would never sell, we're going to put a dollar figure on and say, if you lose this, this is how much it was worth. So if you lose an arm, it's so many dollars. If you lose an eye, it's so many dollars. So we value everything. That's a tort. When you speak of tort reform, you're talking about the way you measure the damages, the way you assess the liability, just what it is that makes that other person responsible for what they did to you, and just how much you're entitled to by way of compensation for that act.
House Bill 2011, relating to disbursements from the Workers' Compensation Fund, where an injury is self-inflicted or intentionally caused by the employer. During the legislative session, this was referred to as the Deliberate Intent Bill, and it was nickname the Free Don Blankenship Bill. So what does this bill, House Bill 2011, actually do between a worker and an employer?
Actually, I had heard it referred to as the Don Blankenship Protective Act.
Okay, well.
And I don't think that's fair, honestly. Workers' compensation has been a problem ever since its inception because we always encounter situations that nobody reasonably anticipated. For example, would one anticipate that a worker would cause his own injuries or set out to cause his own injuries? This bill primarily says with regard to self-inflicted injuries, that is an injury you caused yourself, that if the worker was intoxicated at the time of the injury, he or she is going to be deemed responsible for that injury. Similarly, if they were using a non-prescribed controlled substance, that is something they didn't have a prescription for that might alter their mood or their behavior, then they are considered to be responsible for the accident. The basic thought is, don't go out to lunch and have a couple of beers and then come back, get hurt, and claim that you were injured as a result of your work. With the controlled substances, it doesn't matter when or where you consume them as long as they can be detected in your bloodstream. If you get injured on the job and it's detectable that you used marijuana, a controlled substance, over the weekend, as long as it's detectable, you're going to be considered to be responsible for your own injuries.
Well, that sounds reasonable enough, but what about the deliberate intent portion of this bill? What does that mean?
Deliberate intent is something that has been contentious for a long time. Historically, workers' compensation was the sole source of recovery, that is, for money damages, for an employee who's suffered an injury while at work. Some years ago, the law changed a bit, and if you could show that the employer acted with willful disregard or deliberate intent, then the worker could achieve extra damages through a lawsuit in the circuit court. Proving deliberate intent was difficult at that time, but it did happen from time to time. This recent legislature raised the bar a bit on proving the deliberate intent and made some very specific changes to the laws that an employer, or more specifically, the employee, or more specifically, the employee's lawyer, has to satisfy in order to get additional damages beyond the workers' compensation damages. For example, the employee now has to prove that the employer had actual knowledge of the dangerous condition. There is no presumption of it. Now you have to show evidence of intentional and deliberate failure to conduct an inspection, an audit, or an assessment that's required by law, and that the inspection, audit, or assessment is specifically intended to identify that particular unsafe condition. That's a pretty strict thing to have to do. It's not sufficient to show that the employer's that the employee's immediate supervisor or some member of the management team would have known of that danger if they had exercised reasonable care or been more diligent, gone in and conducted an inspection. You have to show that they actually knew about it.
Well, you can see, Dan, then, how this would get construed into the Upper Big Branch mine disaster in the case against Don Blankenship.
Well, that's the kind of talk that was going on about those things, yes. It's not sufficient to say everybody in the factory or in the mine or in the workplace knew that this was a problem. You have to show that they knew it. And showing that can be a terrific burden. You need things like documents and photographs. And in fact, the new statutes require documentation. They require published industry standards. And more than just having standards, the standards have to specifically apply to this situation, the situation that gave rise to the injury. The standards have to particularly address the mechanism of the injury. It's not enough to say everybody in the industry knows or everybody in the factory knows. You have to point to some objective evidence that says they have to know this is what they have to do.
Sounds like there's much more burden of proof on the employee who was hurt to bring the employer to court to get more financial reimbursement than what workers' compensation was going to provide.
That's exactly right.
Let's move on to Senate Bill 6. This is another liability issue relating to medical professional liability. Now, years ago, this was an issue as it relates to doctors. West Virginia was having a hard time keeping doctors and recruiting doctors because medical malpractice insurance was so high. Doctors couldn't pay it. They were leaving the state, and they needed some relief in terms of their medical professional liability. Here, the legislature talked about nursing homes and nursing home administrators. And I remember a public hearing during the legislative session, Dan, with a lot of nursing home owners and administrators saying that there are too many lawsuits directed at nursing home and nursing home administrators. And this was meant to address that. Did it?
Well, it does, because the major change in this bill is to add nursing homes and pharmacies as healthcare facilities to be covered under the bill with regard to malpractice limitations or caps. Up until this legislative session, there was some question about whether nursing homes and pharmacies were intended to be covered, and a list of other entities, too. There are several of them. But nursing homes were the big one, and that arose out of at least one jury verdict of many tens of millions of dollars against a nursing home when a patient in the nursing home died of dehydration. And the legislature, some of the members of the legislature came out and said, look, when we originally adopted this bill, this Medical Professional Liability Act, we had intended to cover nursing homes and pharmacies and these other entities. We need to tune up the bill to make sure now that it does that. And they did. That's what happened. They didn't increase the caps on those damages. They didn't really change much otherwise, but to include nursing homes and these other entities under the bill.
Dan Ringer, thank you very much.
You're quite welcome, Beth. Thank you.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:53. This morning with widespread frost. Temperatures will be reaching the 50s and low 60s under mostly sunny skies today. Increasing cloudiness tonight with lows in the 30s and low 40s. Rain and thunderstorms in our forecast for Saturday and rain on Sunday. Temperatures remaining in the 50s and low 60s.
Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by the New River Gorge Regional Development Authority, working to diversify the economy in the New River Gorge region of West Virginia. Information at nrgrda.org.
Swedish indie folk singer Jose Gonzalez closed his 2008 set with a cover of a Massive Attack song. Here's Gonzalez with Teardrop on this Mountain Stage Song of the Week. Jose Gonzalez with Teardrop. You can hear this song again and more music Saturday night at 8 on Mountain Stage, right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. West Virginia Morning is produced with the assistance of Suzanne Higgins, Clark Davis, Jessica Lilly, Glynis Bohr, Dave Mistich, Roxy Todd, Liz McCormick, and Jesse Wright. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.